Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to SiriusXM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129. Now back to America This Week with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129. I am Carrie Weber along with Father Matt Malone, and we are talking with Robert David Sullivan, our blogger for our Unconventional Wisdom blog at americamagazine.org, about President Obama's final State of the Union address delivered last night. And we invite you to join our conversation as well. Give us your impressions of what President Obama had to say. You can give us a call at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. Now, Robert, we were mentioning this a little bit on the walk over. We were talking about sort of how we watched the State of the Union, how people took that in. And I watched it in a new way on Amazon, which I had not done before, which apparently was part of a White House effort to recruit younger viewers who may not have access to cable channels or television of some sort because people are so used to just getting everything streaming these days.
Right.
Now, where did you watch this? Did you watch it on...
I watched a couple of live streams. I kept going back and forth between CNN and PBS and the White House itself.
Right,
had a website.
Now, I don't think this was featured on the other ones. I'm not sure. But on Amazon, the speech was accompanied by a kind of PowerPoint slideshow that was sort of half the screen, and then it would be like, oh, President Obama thinks about the future, and there is a silhouette of him looking at the moon, or here are some graphs about job.
Really?
Yeah, it was really bizarre to watch that way. I think the effort was to try to keep young people engaged because no one would ever think they would have a long enough attention span, I guess.
Right.
But I found it oddly distracting and mildly condescending. I'm like, I have enough attention span to sit here for 1 hour and listen to him talk about the future of our country.
And it's much more fun to do the cutaway reaction shots of the audience and to see whether they're applauding or...
Right.
I would think that would keep your interest rather than having these stock photography stills and things.
It was interesting. Some of the statistics were... you know, useful and supplementary, but I would have been perfectly happy to read them later. But I found it kind of interesting. Do you think sort of measures like this are necessary to keep people interested, or do you think it's a distraction, or do you think?
Well, I guess they feel they need to do something because the audience declines every year. Mm-hmm. I don't have the figures for last night, but last year about 32 million watched, which is about a fourth of the size of the Super Bowl audience, and about 20% of all households watched, which was down from 44% during Bill Clinton's first State of the Union, when you had much fewer other things you could be doing if you wanted to watch TV. So I don't think that's going to stop the slide that they put up PowerPoint graphics, but I think they do feel they need to do something more to kind of get the attention of younger viewers.
And it's a way in which our politics kind of suffers from the lack of having these moon landing moments,
right?
Where we all gather around the television to watch something. When I was a boy, I mean, you had no... If you wanted to have the television on, you had to watch the State of the Union. There were three networks, and they all showed the State of the Union.
You had to watch it, even if it was a president you didn't vote for.
Right. If you were listening to the radio, yeah, exactly, even if you didn't vote for them. And otherwise, you turn them both off and you read a book,
right?
And those were the multimedias available to you.
And I think I almost thought the president was kind of sort of aware that his audience was probably dwindling down to, you know, really hardcore political junkies and his own supporters, as opposed to this broad spectrum of Americans that he had to kind of persuade or appeal to their reason or something. I think he probably knew he was speaking to the choir for most of it.
Well, it's interesting because so many people have sort of seemingly, at least if we are to believe the media coverage, expressed a real concern about sort of this, the state of the union, the state of our country. Are we in disrepair? What's going on? We need to, you know, to quote a certain politician, make America great again. Right. One would think that you would want to kind of tune in and say, all right, if I'm ever going to do it, now is the time, you know, to tune in, to see what's going to, what the future of our country holds, to see where we stand now, to get a real assessment of that. And,
but he's a lame duck.
Yeah.
Right. Right. You know, I want to talk about two people who were mentioned in the speech. Well, one indirectly. There was a lot. He seemed to be talking a lot about Donald Trump in the speech when he was talking about the divisiveness and turning against one another. And
false promises.
And he also then, but he also kind of gave the anti-Trump in mentioning Pope Francis specifically.
Right.
Which is the second year in a row in which he's done this?
Well, that's what we think. One of our editors, Kevin Clark, has a blog up today saying he thinks he mentioned him last year as well. Which is kind of amazing in and of itself that you can do that within the State of the Union.
What did you think about that, Robert?
I thought it was actually, I live tweeted during the speech, and his mention of Pope Francis, his quoting of him, was by far the most widely shared thing that I saw on the Twitter feed. He had said, His Holiness Pope Francis told this body from this very spot I stand tonight that, quote, to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place. And as you say, it was very oppositional to his references to the rhetoric of Donald Trump.
Right.
It was also interesting in contrast to the list of people he gave that we had kind of gone after and killed.
Yes, he did. He did kind of wave around the name of Osama bin Laden as a trophy that he had been able to kill him. So
there was a bit of chest thumping.
Definitely.
In the speech that I thought was uncharacteristic of him.
And kind of strange. He did say we're the most powerful country on earth. We spend more on the military than the next eight countries combined. And therefore, we shouldn't, you know, be worried that ISIS or ISIL, as he says, is going to overthrow us tomorrow. But then he also said it only takes a couple of terrorists to wreak havoc. They can recruit now on the internet by just putting out videos. So at the same time, he was acknowledging that our military might doesn't insulate us from these things.
Right.
So it was kind of a strange mixed message of don't worry and panic.
And be a little worried. Yeah, exactly. Well, this is America This Week. We're talking about the State of the Union address that President Obama delivered last night. You can, of course, join the conversation at 888-322-8465. Mike from Virginia, you're talking to America This Week. Welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
How are you?
Oh, good. Hey, I mean, I don't watch it anymore. The State of the Union, I stopped watching it. And I think, in general, interest has declined, mostly because it's just become a dog and pony show. I mean, listening to you guys talking about it, it sounds like you're talking about a soap opera or a professional wrestling match.
Right.
So, back in the 19th century, they used to submit it in writing. So I think at that point, maybe we should go back to the written form or some kind of quasi-PowerPoint or visual presentation that they could just plunk out there on the internet to be consumed, because at this point, I think it's lost all effectiveness. I think originally when the president used to do this, he was doing this as a form of trying to unify the country. I think it may have gone into a spoken form when we were kind of in the World War I situation.
Right. Right.
So, you know, that's gone. Because now it's nothing but a divisive force, and so it really has no practical positive use for the country.
Mike, do you remember a time when it was a positive force, like when you did tune in to catch the State of the Union?
You know, maybe right after we had some sort of catastrophe, maybe like right after 9/11, but very shortly after that, you know, we had that one right after 9/11, but then it started going to divisiveness again. So,
yeah. Okay.
So it's not required to do this in person. That this needs to be done. So I think maybe do it when a unifying need is present, but then otherwise just, you know, if you don't have something nice to say, put it in a different form that's not as divisive.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. Yeah, it's a little like partisanship fatigue, polarization fatigue. Yeah.
And he mentioned soap opera or wrestling, which are both scripted events, and this is obviously a scripted event, in contrast to the debates that have been getting a lot of attention and viewers, and maybe because they're not scripted, maybe we should have something like the question time in the British Parliament, where instead of the president giving a speech, he actually interacts with the opposition party. Maybe that would get people's interest.
Well, I think Mike's point also represents one of the other downsides of the divisiveness in politics, is that sometimes the people who might be the most reasonable people who can bring everyone together just tune out because it's too kind of just crazy right. and chaotic. And you it's like, I have a lot on my plate. I can't also heal the country. I'll leave it to these people or these people. And then those groups seem to just split further and further apart.
And more Americans are describing themselves as independent rather than a member of either party, even though straight ticket voting is up, because I guess when they get in the voting booth, they feel they're compelled to go with one or the other. But more people are describing themselves as not affiliated with either party, and they may be the ones that are really tuning out.
Right, right. Is there a way in which, you know, like being a Republican or a Democrat, it's like saying I belong to MySpace. Like it, there's when you live in a country that's so polarized, right? These traditional political labels can become almost toxic brands.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, this past year when we got to the holiday season, I saw all of these stories about how do you actually go to Thanksgiving or Christmas and sit across from someone with different political views, and all
it's
these
amazing,
guides,
isn't it? Right,
and
yeah.
I was kind of, I don't remember that being such a concern in the past.
Yeah.
But it seems like now everyone is more walking on eggshells about, I might encounter somebody whose views are different than mine.
And in fact, there was a time in polite society in which you didn't discuss politics at the dinner table, right? Yeah. But
I think
Edward is dead.
Part of it is we can also insulate ourselves from opinions that differ with us via the internet these days. We can go to news sources right. where you just hear things that confirm what you already believe and you're not necessarily challenged. And when you're not challenged, you can tend to turn more and more in on your own opinions. I thought President Obama mentioning yesterday the element of trust, that democracy needs trust. And
right.
He says it doesn't work if we think our opponents are motivated by malice, which, as you can elaborate, I'm sure, Father Malone, is a very Ignatian idea. This idea of kind of giving somebody that plus sign, that
right.
assuming they're coming from the best place. And I'm not sure we do that in politics anymore. A lot of times a differing view means you have come from the side of hatred or intolerance or whatnot, rather than something that you've actually thought about.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you're referring to one of the presuppositions of the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius, where he says it is always important to put the very best possible interpretation on the motives and the meaning of the words of your interlocutor. And it's actually an indication of how toxic the political culture is in this country that just saying that makes me sound impossibly naive, right?
Right.
It's that sense of naivete that we have from it is actually its transformative power. I mean, we had on this show just a few months ago, we had George Mitchell, who the former majority leader of the U.S. Senate, and he was talking about his latest book, but he was recounting a story where when he was elected majority leader, he went to go see Bob Dole, whom he did not know very well and had never, you know, really had a public spirited debate with, and said, look, we're going to disagree a lot, but, you know, I'm never going to lie to you, and I'm never going to talk behind your back, and you're never going to hear me say an unkind word about you personally in public or in private. And he said they kept that deal for the rest of their public lives. And that is basically the application of that Ignatian principle, right? But it was seen to be advantageous to them to have such an agreement. And now, in a kind of strictly tactical sense, a very cynical tactical sense, it's not necessarily advantageous to have that kind of agreement because
right.
you're actually driven by your base. Your actions have to be in a polarized country because the votes are on the margins.
That's true. And ironically, the parties are weaker now. It's because the ideology is stronger because all these people running for office have independent sources of contributions. They don't get much from the party themselves.
Right.
When the parties were stronger, you could have a George Mitchell or Bob Dole telling their members, okay, on this vote, we have to come together. We're not going to get everything we want on this vote, mm-hmm. but we have to do this for the good of the country.
Right.
You know, it's hard to imagine a figure who can do that now.
Yeah, exactly. So we have about a minute left. What did you think of the quality of the speech as a piece of oratory?
The first thing I thought of was breezy because it just seemed like he was not really writing it that way as something that would hold up as a piece of oratory, but more as kind of giving his impressions of what's been going on in politics as he prepares to leave the stage. And there were some good ideas. I don't think it necessarily hung together as a speech that will be remembered much beyond today.
It's interesting. You know, I agreed with you. I thought it was rather breezy and conversational. You know, it was a big turning point in the history of presidential oratory. It was 1961, John Kennedy's inaugural address, and he was the first one delivered this kind of speech, knowing that it was going to be heard by more people than it would be read, right? In other words, that it was at that moment that political speeches became things that were seen and heard rather than read. And it's affected a very different kind of different kind of prose. So, Robert David Sullivan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Of course, our listeners can check out your work and your ongoing blog and column in America, Unconventional Wisdom. And you'll sure want to check out his work as we head into this vital presidential election year. Carrie, when we come back,
we'll be talking with Professor Michael Peppard of Fordham University about his new book and one of the oldest Christian sites in Syria.
Terrific. Stay with us. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.